गौर भक्तवृंद की ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं उदीरयेत्। शृण्वतां स्वगत कृष्णां पुण्यश्रवणकीर्तनां हृदयन्तस्तो हि अभद्राणि विधिनोति सहृत्सतं नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिति। ओम ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नमः ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त बृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 5 Canto 5, Chapter 20, titled The Structure of the Universe, Verse Number 38. Etavan loka vinyaso mana lakshana samstabir vichintite kavibhi satu panchasat kotu ganitasya bhugolasya turiya bhago yam loka loka chalaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktivinoda Prabhupada ki. Learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions and propensities to cheat have thus described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements and locations. With great deliberation, they have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka Loka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas or 1 billion miles. by His Divine Grace and Potential Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has given accurate astronomical information about the location of Loka mountain, the movements of the sun globe, and the distance between the sun and the circumference of the universe. However, the technical terms used in the astronomical calculations given by the Jyotirveda are difficult to translate into English. Therefore, to satisfy the reader, we may include the exact Sanskrit statement given by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, which records exact locations regarding universal affairs. It's okay. Satu loka lokastu bhu golokasya bhu sambandhanda golokesya artaha suryasya eva bhuopi anda golokayor madhyavartitvat khagolam iva bhugolam api panchashat koti yojana pramanam tasya turya bhaga sharda dvadash koti yojana vistarochraya iti artaha bhustu chatustrimsha lakshano panchashat koti pramanagneya yata meru madhyan manasottara madhya paryantam sharda sapta panchash Shall loko sotara koti yojana pramanam manasotara madhyat swaduduka samudra paryantam sannavanti laksha yojana pramanam tataha kanchani bhumi sharda sapta panchashal lakshotara koti yojana pramanam evam ekato meru loka lokayor antaralam ekadasha Shall lakshadika chatushkoti parmitam anyatopi tatatyeto loka lokal loka paryantam stanam dvavimshati lokas lakshotarasta koti parmitam loka lokal bahirapi ekataha etavad eva anyatopi etavad evayad vakshate yontar vistara etenam hi aloka parimanam cha Vyakhyatam yad bahir loka loka chalan iti ekato loka loka sharda dvadasha koti yojana parimana anyatopi sa tateti evam chatushtrimshal lakshano panacha panchashat koti pramanam bhushabdi dvipa parvata gneya ata evanda golokat sarvato dikshu saptadasha laksha yojana vakashe vartamane sati prithviyah sheshanagena dharanam diggajaischa nischalikaranam sartakam bhaved anyata tu vyakhyantare panchashat koti pramanatvan andagolika lagnatve tattat sarvam akinchit karam syat chakshushe manvantare chakshmat majjanam shrivaraha devenottaupamanam cha durgatam syad iti adhikam vivechaniyam. Hare Krishna. The purport is that we are so uneducated in Sanskrit, the language of scholars, when Bhagavatam was written and so many other Vaishnava scriptures were written, that our only hope is to trust Prabhupada's writings and follow them and apply in our lives and see how they are acting. It's Prabhupada sometimes gives the example of Krishna consciousness. He calls Krishna consciousness is a science. Like he often uses the words the science of devotional service. So it's a lot of the information given to us is in Sanskrit and it's undecipherable. Like Jayajanath Prabhu was talking to me the other day and he was telling how he feels pained by the fact that so many of Jiva Goswami's writings, I mean, compared to Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami is relatively recent, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also writes in Sanskrit and he feels pained that he couldn't read them so much. But it takes, like Prabhupada says, that it takes 12 years for someone to completely understand the grammar, rules and vocabulary of Sanskrit language, given our limited time span and our other engagements and services, it's not possible. So one message is that we should be grateful for Prabhupada and other acharyas who have transparently transferred the language, and Prabhupada especially for translating it into English and making sure what we need to know is there for us. It's a very important contribution. Otherwise, imagine us not having access to anything in English, and everyone all over the world has to learn either Sanskrit or Bengali. In fact, the prediction by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, interestingly, wasn't that someone will translate everything to English and they will start reading it. He said, what did he say? He said, everyone will come to Mayapur and they will learn Bengali just to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Prabhupada, after 100 years, perhaps, he made it even simpler for us. It's like he peeled the banana for us and he's placing in front of our mouth to eat. We don't even need to learn Bengali. We don't even need to learn Sanskrit, and we're just reading English and appreciating a philosophy that talks about dimensions of the universe and the structure of the universe. Something really amazing for me. It takes people multiple lifetimes to know these things accurately. I'm going to read some similar teachings by Chaitanya Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami on the structure of the universe and how the universe is organized. But before that, I just want to say, I mean, how far we are in terms of modern understanding. First of all, modern understanding, the empirical understanding of the structure of the universe, they plainly accept that it's not possible to measure the universe, and it might be infinite in size. So they measure what is called the size of the observable universe. And of course, we have to keep, we have to be cautious that that size may not be accurate. I mean, over the last 200 or 300 years, the sizes of the distance between individual planets have changed so much. Within the so-called solar system changed so much that, I mean, we could take this as a rough estimate, but basically they say there are several billions or millions of light years is the size of the observable universe. It seems to be slightly contradictory, because we say it's only a billion miles, which is 4 billion miles, which seems to be smaller. So one way to understand this is it's not a contradiction. When we say about universe, it's the universe, it's our universe, and it's called the Brahmanda. The exact translation of the universe is Brahmanda. It's one of the many universes that come from Mahavishnu. So from Mahavishnu, when he is exhaling, just like from the pore of his skin, and that's another correlation. Big Bang theory says that the whole universe came from an infinitesimally small and infinitely dense singular point, and Bhagavatam also says that the whole universe came from pores of the skin from Mahavishnu lying in the Karna ocean. So our idea of Brahmanda is there are multiple Brahmandas, and each Brahmanda we roughly translate as universe, whereas the empirical understanding of universe is when we translate things to English, some things get distorted. So universe also means everything that exists. So everything that exists is not just our Brahmanda. There are multiple Brahmandas which make up the material world. And there are and there's also the spiritual world, which is roughly described as three times larger. So once Lord Brahma also perhaps had the same misconception that the universe, he is also Everything that is supposed to be there, is the universe. It's our natural way of thinking. If Prabhupada calls that Dr. Frog's mentality. If someone is in a well, he can't really, all his life, he can't really comprehend how long the Pacific Ocean is. For those of us who have traveled around the Pacific Ocean to go to India or some other places, it's possible to comprehend. But we are also within the well of planet Earth, you could say. And it's very difficult for us to comprehend how vast the universe is. And for Brahma also, he knows several planets, millions and billions of planets, but all of them are within the Brahmanda he helped in creating. So for him, that is his well. So Brahma once visited Krishna to talk about something, and there is a long conversation, and if you allow me, I would like to read the long conversation, but the short version is Krishna said, Krishna kahe e brahmanda panchashat koti yojana. So Krishna said, this brahmanda, this universe is panchashat kota yojana. Panchashat is 50, koti is crore. I always get confused, but basically 1 lakh is 100,000 and koti is 100 times that. So 100 shata koti is 1 billion, like that. So panchashat koti is half a billion, like that. So panchashat koti is half a billion. Yojanas, and yojana is described as 8 miles. So panchashat koti is half a billion multiplied by 8, that is 4 billion miles. So Krishna said, this brahmanda is 4 billion miles. Atikshudra, you're thinking it's long, this is very big, but this is kshudra, it is very small. Kshudra is small, and atikshudra is very small. Tate, therefore, Tumara Charivadanam. That's why you have only 4 heads. There are other universes that are, Krishna describes the size of that, trillion times larger than this universe, and they have correspondingly so many heads. So the point is, realize how humble you are. That's another message we can take while reading this chapter in particular, but also the entire 5th canto. As Rompad Maharaj once, I mean, what does that mean to me? Anyways, I can't comprehend what moving mountains are and so many millions of miles of things. I mean, we consider Mount Everest as the highest thing, and it's how many kilometers? It's 8 kilometers or so, which is around 5 miles or so. That is supposed to be the, that's our comprehension of the tallest thing we ever could go, and we get entered into the Guinness Book of World Records if we climb that in certain time. And there was a time when no one could even climb that. So that is our comprehension. And here we're talking about billions of miles. And his answer was, when I read it, and understand it as how wonderful my Krishna is. He created such a majestic and glorious thing. I'm paraphrasing. He basically gave a very long explanation, but that's the gist I got. He appreciated, I mean, just like people say Discovery Channel, that doesn't mean that they're going to live with lions and tigers tomorrow, but similarly, although knowing about those different what do we call varshas and dvipas might be in one sense irrelevant to devotees, because could be relevant under certain conditions, but most of us are trying to get out of the material existence and preferably go into some Vaikuntha planets. So why do we need to know the each and every detail of the universe? And the answer was to understand how great the creation is, and to develop a feeling of mood and awe and respect for Krishna and Krishna Vishnu. That's one thing. And second thing is to realize how small and insignificant we are. as such, we're very insignificant even in a city called Chicago, which is like one or two pins in the globe. And we have so many planets in this Brahmanda, and there are so many Brahmandas, and here Krishna is confirming that we're in a very small Brahmanda. So that shows how humble we are, and that also shows another thing, that how insignificant our achievements in Chicago or in our workplace within Chicago or in our occupational engagement in Chicago are. That's one way to know how insignificant it is. It doesn't really matter in a global scale. No one is even going to notice us. So the only thing that's going to matter is us escaping out of this place. We can't really be a hero in this place. It's just not possible. We are so small that we can only be a good servant. We can never be a good master. We can never compete with Krishna, who created so much. At best, we can become a mayor of Chicago or president of the United States. But even that is so small. That is very insignificant. And that's the mood that great devotees like Priyavrat Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj, and we heard about the other sons of Priyavrat who did the same. That's their mood, really. Even though they ruled over vast tracts of land, they realize how insignificant this really is. It's like, I heard another thing recently, I don't know from whom. The difference between children and grown-ups is, when children build a sand castle or something in the beach, and something happens, like a friend topples it, or the ocean comes and takes it back to the ocean. I mean, they understand it. They don't feel like their life is destroyed. Perhaps they try to build another one, or the mom calls him or her, they'll go back to house. But basically, they get it. The only thing with adults is they take their game too seriously. When something happens, if there is a global economic meltdown or some recession or some financial crisis or a personal crisis or emotional crisis, and if some of our plans don't go through or get baffled, it devastates us. Some people go into shock for decades, if not for their whole lifetime. And sometimes as devotees, we are also not immune from this. But so in that respect, Canto 5 is not some canto that we should just cruise through or just be understand that, hey, this is a program. Prabhupada said we can't skip 5th canto, that's why we are in 5th canto. That's not the reason. There is a lot to learn there's a lot to understand. Every day when we hear and when we come here and listen about how large the dimensions are, we learn a lot. So basically, this Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Sanatan Das Goswami, and it's in Madhya Leela chapter 21, and in chapter 20 he was talking about he started speaking already in chapter 20, and I'm sorry, the internet is not connecting. So, but basically, I'm reading from in between the chapter so that we have enough time to cover some important points. And the context is Brahma approaches Krishna after the Brahma Vimohan Leela, and he said, "Je kahe Krishnera vaibhava moi sab janon." Like, Jeka, he means whoever says Krishna's vaibhava or glories, mui sabajanon means me, I know everything. Whoever says I know everything to be known about Krishna, or in other words, whoever says I know everything that is to be known about the material world, se janukam, let him be like that. Khaya mane mui e manon, but I don't think like that through my body and mind. I only think like this. Aj tumara ananta vaibhavamrita sindhu, means age, I mean this your tumara means yours, ananta vaibhava amrita sindhu. It's just like bhakti rasa amrita sindhu. Ananta vaibhava means infinite glories. It's nectarian ocean of the infinite glories. Mora vak mano gamya means they are not within the reach of my words or mind, and I can't realize even a drop of that ocean. That's the consciousness of Brahma, who manages a whole Brahmanda. Jananta eva janantu, this is from Bhagavatam. Kim vahuktya name prabho manaso vapaso vacha vaibhavam tava gochara. It's the same thing in Sanskrit. It's amazing how even great people like Lord Chaitanya and even Krishna himself, you see them quoting other writings. Like Krishna says, this is the opinion of the Munis, and sometimes he quotes Upanishads in Bhagavad Gita, and Lord Chaitanya often quotes Bhagavatam and Brahma Samhita. And then again he says, Krishnera Mahima Rahu Kebatara Gnata. Means Krishna's glories, let the glories of Krishna be, who could be aware of all of them. Vrindavana Stanera Deka Ascharya Vibhuta. His abode Vrindavan has many wonderful opulences, just try to see them all. And then there's a description of the entire Vrindavan, of how Vrindavan is only 32 miles, but we hear Krishna has infinite or so many gopas, and each of them has a calf and cow. It's a mystery how everything can fit in 32 miles. And here Lord Chaitanya is saying that all the Vaikuntha planets and innumerable universes are located in one corner of this tract. So no one can estimate the opulence of Krishna. Krishna's opulence is unlimited. However, just as one sees the moon through the branches of a tree, I wish to give a little indication. The idea is you can't know completely, but just knowing a little bit is sufficient to appreciate the glories. So the idea is God is great doesn't mean that it ends there. You should also know how great the God is. And that's a difference between Bhagavatam and so many other religions. They say God is great, they say Allah Akbar, which is the same thing. But they don't go into the details of how God is great in terms of the material creation and spiritual worlds. They have no information. They just stop there. God is great. But here, Lord Brahma wants us to know, at least to whatever extent our mind can understand, not that God is great, that's done, let me be absorbed in my business. When describing the transcendental opulence of Krishna, the ocean of opulences manifested in the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his mind and senses were immersed in the ocean. Thus he was perplexed. And then Lord Chaitanya explains how Krishna is the master of the three worlds, and the three principal, it's called Trimurti in India, basically Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu. No one is equal to or greater than him. The same thing that we hear in Bhagavatam, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the greatest of all, no one is equal to him. And the primary predominating deities, the Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu, they simply carry out the orders of Lord Krishna, who is master of them all. In Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 6, Brahma says, following the will of Supreme Personality of Godhead, I create, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in the form of Shirodaksha Vishnu, maintains all affairs of material nature. Thus the supreme control of the three modes of material nature is Lord Vishnu. So that is one level of understanding, and where Vishnu is the master of the Trimurtis, who are basically creating, maintaining and destroying. That basically covers up all the functions that you can do. For anything you can only create, maintain and destroy. Once you know how it is created and how it is maintained, how it is destroyed, the story ends there. Another way of approaching the same subject of creation is Mahavishnu, who is called Karnodakshaya Vishnu, Padmanabha, who is also called Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. who is a super soul present, Paramatma, are the super souls of all subtle and gross existences. So how basically Krishna is not just creating different Brahmandas from the pores of his body, but within each Brahmanda, he supports the whole planetary system. Basically from his, it's called Padmanabha or Garbhodaksha Vishnu, because when he lies down from his stomach, there is a lotus flower that stems out, and on the lotus flower is Brahma, and he creates the whole material universe. So basically he's there within each Brahmanda also. And not just that, he's also there as a companion to everything created by Brahma. So he's creating all the Brahmandas, he's there with every Brahmanda, and within every Brahmanda, along with every living entity, he's there as a companion. That is another way to understand the glories of how God is great. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom Mahavishnu is a portion of plenary portion. Again, this is from Brahma Samhita. Yasyaika nishishtakalam athavalambu. So that's the verse we chanted during any auspicious ceremony. And so this is the second meaning. So another confidential meaning is Lord Krishna has three. This is a spiritual meaning now. He has three places of residence. One is his internal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, his intermediate abode, the spiritual sky, and his external abode, this material world. So not just within the material world, but even within the spiritual world, he lives in the Goloka, and he lives, that's called his internal abode. And there is another thing called his, in his internal abode, Lord Krishna has personal friends, associates, father and mother. And we just described how in this corner of Vrindavan, all the whole Vaikuntha planets are present. And that is where the spiritual energy, working as a maid servant, exhibits the rasa dance and the quintessence of all pastimes. And there are several glories of Vrindavan Dham, such as it's very soft due to the mercy of Supreme Lord, and it is especially opulent due to conjugal love. The transcendental glories of the son of Maharaj Nanda are exhibited here. Under these circumstances, not the least anxiety is awakened within us. That's how the prayer is. And below the Vrindavan, we have the spiritual sky, which is Vishnu Loka or the Vaikuntha planets. There are innumerable number of Vaikuntha planets controlled by Narayan. Just like there are innumerable material planets here, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets there. And there are innumerable other expansions of Krishna. So that's his second abode. And all the spiritual sky, all the expansions of Krishna are full in all six opulences. And Krishna has Krishna basically takes unlimited number of forms and enjoys unlimited number of pastimes. And so there's an analogy that these different Vaikuntha planets are like different rooms of a treasure house, filled with all opulences. Just like if you go to, the idea is that in a treasure house, think of a treasure house with millions of rooms, and in every room there are certain opulences. So Vaikuntha planets are compared in that way. Every Vaikuntha planet is opulent, fully opulent, but the kind of opulence is different. So it's all like a treasure house. And between the spiritual world and material, so that's all spiritual world. Vaikuntha, all Vaikuntha planets, including Goloka Vrindavan, and separating them is a body of water called Viraja, and this water is generated from the bodily perspiration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, and beneath that is the material world, the external abode. So this is another way of understanding. One is, so we discussed basically three ways of understanding. One is he is the master of the Trimurtis, basically create, maintain and destruct. And the other is he generates the Brahmandas, multiple universes. He makes sure Brahma is working properly by first creating him and making sure he creates everything within each Brahmanda. And not just that, every living entity in that Brahmanda, he makes sure he is doing what he is supposed to do, and he acts as a sanctioner for them there. And the third way we can understand the glory of Krishna is how he is in the Golok Vrindavan, which is an uncomparable place of bliss, and the best of pastimes, the best of relationships are seen in Golok Vrindavan. And he's also present in the Vaikuntha planets, which are like rooms in a treasure house. Each room is full of six opulences, and he's also present in the external abode. That is how great God is. And another vocabulary for this is Goloka Dham, Vaikuntha Dham, and Devi Dham. Those are the three places. It is said that the spiritual world is three-fourths of energy. It's called Tripad Vibhuti. And the material world is one-fourth of the energy. It's said that the three-fourths of the reason why we hear so much in Bhagavatam about the one-fourth of energy and not about three-fourths is, here Lord Chaitanya confirms that the three-fourths part of Lord Krishna's energy is beyond our speaking power. Let us therefore hear elaborately about the remaining one-fourth of his energy. Actually, it is very difficult to ascertain the number of universes. Every universe has its separate Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are permanent governors. Therefore, there is also no counting them. And then comes this actual pastime of Brahma coming here. Until then, it was the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami. And now, as an instructive thing, Brahma comes to Dwaraka. Ekadin, like the initial prayers, as we discussed about Brahma and Krishna, those happened in the Brahma Vimohan Lila time. And then Lord Chaitanya went back and described about how to understand Krishna's glory by quoting Brahma and several others. And now he's giving this other way of appreciating Krishna through this pastime. So, Ekadina Dwara Kete Krishna Dekhi Bare Brahma Aila Dwara Pala Janaila Krishna Re. So once when Krishna was ruling Dwaraka, Lord Brahma came to see him. And the doorman immediately informed Lord Krishna. So Brahmaji arrived. When Krishna was informed, he immediately asked the doorman, "Oh, so which Brahma is this? What is his name?" So the doorman therefore asked returned and questioned Lord Brahma. "So which Brahma are you?" And Lord Brahma was surprised. He told the doorman, "Please go inform Lord Krishna that I am the four-headed Brahma who is the father of the four Kumaras." The doorman then informed Lord Krishna of the Lord Brahma's description, basically how he looks, and Lord Krishna gave him permission to enter. And the doorman brought Lord Brahma in front of Lord Krishna, and he offered his obeisances and everything. After Lord Brahma worshipped him, and Krishna also basically exchanged pleasantries with him, and he asked him, "So why have you come here?" And then Lord Brahma said, "I'll tell you later on why I came here, but you first tell me. There is this doubt in my mind. You should dissipate. What's the purport, or why did you inquire which Brahma had come to see you? What's the purpose of such an inquiry? Do you mean that there are more Brahmas in this universe?" We shouldn't really, when we hear such things, there are two ways to think it. One way to think is that, hey, Brahma doesn't even know this. We already heard all these things just now. Perhaps he's not doing his reading properly. Other way to understand this, and it's a proper way to understand, Prabhupada explained this in the context of Arjuna hearing Bhagavad Gita in a in apparently bewildered mood, is that he's behaving like that so that he can teach us a lesson. That's appropriate way of understanding it. So upon hearing this, Lord Krishna smiled and basically meditated, and in that meditation he made unlimited number of phone calls, and there are unlimited number of Brahmas who arrived there like instantly, and each of them had different number of heads. Some had 10 heads, some had 20, some 100, some 1,000, some 10,000, 100,000, 10 million and 100 million. This number is described, but basically one can't count the number of heads one has. Sometimes the number 100 million is given. It doesn't mean that it's not 100 million plus 1, it's or 100 million minus 1, it's exactly 100 million. Understanding is that's a magnitude that one can't count. It takes you your whole lifetime to count those many heads, so it's that magnitude. It's not possible to count. And with each of them, they also brought respective Shivas. And here it's mentioned that Shiva also had, our Shiva had one head, but here with various, even Shiva had a lot of heads, 100,000 and 10 million. Many Indras arrived with hundreds and thousands of eyes all over their bodies. And when the four-headed Brahma of this universe saw all this opulence of Krishna, he became very much bewildered. And this is a good analogy, and that's why pay attention. He considered himself a rabbit among many elephants. And this is Brahma, this is our Brahma, who maintains innumerable planets. And Earth is one tiny planet in that. And we are in a small country, and within the small country, we are in a small city. So imagine what we are to these personalities. But that's what Brahma said. I feel like a rabbit among elephants. All the Brahmas who came to see Krishna basically offer respects to his lotus feet, and it's amazing how they all fit in Dwaraka, though. That's another thing we need to talk about. One would imagine that Dwaraka is a city like Chicago, and if even one person with 1 billion heads comes to Chicago, it will be gone. it's amazing how so many people fit in the palace of Krishna's Dwaraka. Offer their respects at his lotus feet, and basically all the Brahmas exchange pleasantries, and then basically all of them left, saying that it's very fortunate that you thought about us. And Lord Krishna replied, I wanted to see all of you one time, so that's why I arranged this get together. And he basically asked, do you have any fear from demons? Because that's another time when we hear Brahma interacting with Krishna or Vishnu. Whenever there is fear of demons, Krishna, Brahmas basically prays to him. Said, and all Brahma said, no, I mean, because of your pastimes and because of your incarnations in our respective Brahmandas, in the respective planets, basically all the demons are being taken care of. We are good. So thank you so much. So this goes to show that this phenomenon of Krishna appearing to Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata, I come here to protect my devotees and annihilate the demons. This happens in all the Brahmandas. And it's important, we know all these things, but it's important to remind ourselves. Otherwise, there is a danger of us thinking that this is a sectarian religion like Jehovah Witnesses or Mormons or Sunni Islam, just like that. We are one particular branch of Hinduism that came from India, and our culture is Indian, our traditions are Indian, and Krishna is an Indian god from Uttar Pradesh, and Ram is also from nearby. There are a lot of people in India thinking like that, and Some people say that hey, we are in South India, so that's why we don't find it appropriate to worship the North Indian god. So we are basically Dravidians. Interestingly, they say they are Brahmanas, but they say they don't want to worship God. They say we all took a Brahmana birth, but these gods are all Aryans. Aryans basically came to North India and they created all these gods, and we are Dravidians. We are ancient to them, and we live in South India, so we have nothing to do with this religion. I'm telling all these things, of course, all of you know all these things, but as a reminder, we should know these things so that we don't fall into the danger of thinking that we are following a material religion. So we should know that it's not just from one country or one planet or one Brahmanda or even multiple Brahmandas. It's from the spiritual world. So it's very important for us to remind ourselves again and again. It's worth repeating it in every lecture. Otherwise, we first start thinking the religion is material, and then we start thinking that we are this body, and then we go into sense gratification. So then comes Brahma's prayers, and then comes this particular verse that I started with. Krishna kahe ei Brahmanda panchashat kochti yojana ati kshudra tate tumara chari vandana. So this 4 billion mile diameter universe. So from when we read in Bhagavatam, it's a context of this Brahmanda is so big, but for Brahma, who is the owner of this Brahmanda, or the CEO of this Brahmanda, to put it in a better way, saying Krishna is saying this is 4 billion miles, but Krishna's meaning of 4 billion miles is it's very small. It's the smallest of all universes. That's why you only have 4 heads. That's why others have trillions of heads. And it gives some dimensions of other universes. And it says your head is so small because of that reason. And then comes another thing. Ekapada vibhuti ihara nahi pramana, tripada vibhuti rakhebakare parimana. An extension of this beyond Brahmandas and beyond material universes, it's tough to know how big the material world is. And even scientists accept it. That's why they use terms like observable universes, and they make inferences that sometimes they don't actually measure. They just make, based on the sizes, they make some inferences. And so if they keep making inferences like that, they could say that Dwaraka is like trillions of miles in diameter because so many Brahmas could fit into that. But that's another way of missing the sizes completely wrong. But basically, we can't really measure the size of the universes we are in currently. So how can we measure the size of a spiritual world, which is much larger than the material world? And in this way, Krishna bade farewell to Brahma. And Krishna basically goes on explaining then the glories of Vraja. But I think that's beyond the scope of this discussion. We can discuss some other day. And there is another beautiful set of verses from Uddhava Gita in 11th canto, 22nd chapter, where Uddhava asked a similar question. My dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, how many different elements of creation have been enumerated by great sage? I have heard you personally describe a total of 28. God, the Jiva, the Mahatattva, false ego, 5 gross elements, 10 senses, the mind, the 5 subtle objects of perception, and 3 modes of nature. But some authorities say there are 26 elements, while others cite 25 or else 7. Some say 9, some say 6, some 4, or some 11. Or even others say there are 17, 16, 13. That's quite a few, basically. Probably all the numbers between 5 and 28 were taken, most of them. What did each of these sages have in mind when he calculated the creative elements in such different ways? O Supreme Eternal, kindly explain this to me. I mean, this is slightly different, but the context is somewhat the same. There's so many ways to. I want to understand this, and I want to get this right. So there are so many contradictions. I want to make sure everything is clear in my mind, so I know everything about the universe. Then Lord Krishna replied, "Because all material elements are present everywhere, it is reasonable that different learned brahmanas have analyzed them in different ways. All such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. When philosophers argue, I don't choose to analyze this particular case in the same way that you have. It is simply my own insurmountable energies that are motivating their analytic disagreements. By interaction of my energies, different opinions arise. But for those who have fixed their intelligence on me and control their senses, differences of perception disappear. And consequently, the very cause for argument is removed. O best among men, because subtle and gross elements mutually enter into one another, philosophers may calculate the number of basic material elements in different ways according to their personal desire. All subtle elements, material elements, are actually present within their gross effects. Similarly, all gross elements are present within their subtle causes, since material creation takes place by progressive manifestation of elements from subtle to gross. Thus, we can find all material elements within any single element." So Krishna is basically saying, some people might separate the subtle elements from gross elements, as they might be double counting. That's also correct, but at the same time, you can see subtle as within the gross, because gross is the manifestation and subtle is a property. Because it's a property, it's an attribute of the gross, you might not double count it. And another way is, you don't need to count the gross, you can only count the subtle, because the gross things come from the subtle things. Yeah, because everything is energy of Krishna. If you want to name only one thing, you just name energy of Krishna and everything is covered. Yeah, so it's like that. So the different ways of classification. This is the main text. And that's a relation between this text and that. Therefore, no matter which of these thinkers is speaking, and regardless of whether in their calculations they include material elements within their previous subtle causes, or else within their subsequent manifest products, I accept their conclusions as authoritative, because a logical explanation can always be given for each of the different theories. And the idea is that there's so many ways to analyze the properties of the material creation. And here Krishna is talking about ontological classification. This is that, this is this, and this is that. And in our chapter in Bhagavatam, we are describing about the structure of the universe. This is that length, and these are different geographical areas. And sometimes, as Daiti Prabhu was pointing out in his introductory lecture previously, different sages see Jambudvipa in different ways. And these are all basically classifications of material planets. The most important thing is the essence. The essence is that even if you know all these 28 elements, and even if you know the precise, if you can visualize the precise structure of the universe in your mind and can name them and basically tell what is going to happen when, and you know the history, present and future of all these planets, and you know the names of each and every atom and each and every element in each of these planets, if you don't realize that you're not this body, you're an insignificant servant of Krishna, and your intrinsic nature is to be a devotee of Krishna, and you don't practice devotional service to go here, it is futile. So devotees are supposed to be saragrahis, and our main goal is to understand the essence of the message. So it is okay to, it is good if you know the details, so you can appreciate how great Krishna is and how small we are, and that inspires us. But Sometimes, even if you miss the precise details, like how many miles, how many elements, but if that mood is there, that's the most important take-home message. The take-home message is not this verse is not that the diameter of the universe is 4 billion miles. The take-home message is that we are very insignificant, that no matter what we do here, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to us, doesn't matter to anyone. We can't really replace God. We can't be a hero. God is the only hero, and we are his servants. And in that, by serving him, we're making sure the show is going on, and the relationships between him and you that actually make you great. So that's the take-home message. I'm sorry for really stretching this out too much, but any discussion, any thoughts?
Hey, Krishnaprabhu, thank you for your class. So I have two questions, but I don't know if you have time for both. I'll tell you what they are. You can answer whichever one you like.
You know the answers, but
I don't. I was wondering, because it's described how when the false ego enters the pradhan, that's mm-hmm. when mahatattva is generated, and then everything comes from that. So it's really remarkable, the power of that false ego, because it seems like it's very intrinsically connected to the creation mm-hmm. of everything in the universe. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about that. And also, in terms of like the order, I was wondering, what happens, like Brahma comes out of the lotus flower first, and then he manipulates the mahatattva, and he's the one that injects the false ego into the pradhan, or does that already all happen, all the elements come out, and then Lord Brahma manipulates that? Do you know what I mean? Do you know the mm-hmm. order of...
So you're saying whether pradhan comes out first and he implants a false ego? I would say, I don't know the precise order, but I would say he has some control over what happens in this universe. It's basically described that based on the karma of the jivas, Lord Brahma awards them the bodies. And all the him being the creator of this universe, all the demigods basically report to him, and he is responsible for which body the person gets. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita that how a person takes birth in a particular thing. They come down as rain and they go into the grains, and when the it's described there in the context of, because Bhagavad Gita is for human beings, it said that when someone eats those grains, the living entities enter as semen, and when the semen enters the corresponding female part, he goes into there. But your question is basically the whole process of creating this mechanism of grain of, there is this the subtle creation and gross creation. We are talking about the subtle creation, where how originally plants came into being, and how basically from the sense of smell, how did earth come in. I'm not sure who is the originator of it. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And anything else? Okay. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Do you want to announce it? Huh?